So, good morning, everyone. Do you all know this book, Tattoos on the Heart? I'll read you a bit from the back. It's, I think, one of the most powerful books on compassion that I've read. I read it many years ago and have just recently found it in the teacher cottage. And finding new inspiration on the power of compassion from this book. So I'll just read you a bit from the back. It's written by Father Gregory Boyle, who is a Jesuit priest. And he runs this nonprofit called Homeboy Industries, which is a gang intervention program located in the Boyle Heights neighborhood of Los Angeles, the gang capital of the world. Arranged by theme and filled with sparkling humor and glowing generosity, these essays offer a stirring look at how full our lives could be if we could find the joy in loving others and in being loved unconditionally. These essays about universal kinship and redemption are moving examples of the power of unconditional love and the importance of fighting despair. Gorgeous and uplifting, Tattoos on the Heart reminds us that no life is less valuable than another. And so I want to read you this story about Miguel. There's a reference to this Galway Canal poem we've been studying, reteaching a thing its loveliness. And Miguel does this. Teaches us about dignity and about finding our own goodness. So I'm just going to read you this story. This is Father Gregory Boyle. And so he founded Homeboy Industries. He calls all of his friends and the people he works with, all of the former gang members, he calls them homies. I had a 23-year-old homie named Miguel working for me on our graffiti crew. As with a great many of our workers, I had met him years earlier while he was detained. He was an extremely nice kid whose pleasantness was made all the more remarkable by the fact that he had been completely abandoned by his family. Prior to their rejection of him, they had mistreated, abused, and scarred him plenty. He calls me one New Year's Day. Happy New Year, G. Hey, that's very thoughtful of you, dog, I say. You know, Miguel, I was thinking of you, you know, on Christmas. So what did you do for Christmas? I asked, knowing that he had no family to welcome him in. Oh, you know, I was just right here, meaning his tiny little apartment where he lives alone. All by yourself, I ask. Oh, no, he says quickly. I invited homies from the crew. You know, vatos like me, who didn't have no place to go for Christmas. He names the five homies who came over, all former enemies from rival gangs. Really, I tell him, that was nice of you. But he's got me revved and curious now. So I ask him, what did y'all do? Well, he says, you're not going to believe this, but I cooked a turkey. You can feel his pride right through the phone. Wow, you did? How did you prepare it? You know, he says, ghetto style. I tell him I'm not really familiar with this recipe. He's more than happy to give up his secret. Yeah, well, you just rub it with a gang of butter, throw a bunch of salt and pepper on it, squeeze a couple of limones over it, and put it in the oven. It tasted proper. I said, wow, that's impressive. What else did you have besides the turkey? Just that, just turkey, he says. His voice tapers to a hush. Yeah, the six of us. We just sat there, staring at the oven, waiting for the turkey to be done. One would be hard-pressed to imagine something more sacred and ordinary than these six orphans staring in an oven together. It's the entire law and the prophets, all in one moment, right there in this humble, holy kitchen. Not long after this, I give Miguel a ride home after work. I had long been curious about Miguel's own certain resilience. When we arrive at his apartment, I say, "Can I ask you a question? How do you do it? I mean, given all that you've been through, all the pain and stuff you've suffered, how are you like the way that you are?" I genuinely want to know. And Miguel has his answer at the ready. "You know, I always suspected that there was something of goodness in me, but I just couldn't find it. Until one day," he quiets a bit, "one day I discovered it here in my heart. I found it, goodness. And ever since that day, I've always known who I was." He pauses, caught short by his own truth, reteaching loveliness, and turns and looks at me. "And now, nothing can touch me." The poet writes, "Someone fills the cup in front of us. We taste only sacredness. And the world will throw at us what it will, and we cling to our own sacredness, and nothing can touch us."